Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we are now continuing with today's edition of Q&A with Layla. This is part two. So what's our next question, Layla?
Okay, we have another Judy. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Thanks for answering my question regarding my stomach not being good every time I visit Mexico. And you mentioned switching around my probiotics. My follow-up question is, do I mix my probiotics up during my week in Mexico or periodically throughout the year? What else should I be doing with my probiotics?
All right. You first, Layla.
Yeah, well, first of all, when you're international travel, it's always the best idea to take along some Dr. O'Hara's with you. In case you do get a traveler's diarrhea, you could take up to six of that a day. It works very, very, very well. I'm a big fan of probiotic use. Sometimes I will change around my probiotics if I say, okay, I've been taking this for many months, let me go to another one, or not. I don't have a particular problem or anything. It's more curiosity for me than anything else. You know, what will this do, or how will I feel if I take this, or will there be a difference or not? But we have to remember that, you know, as much as 70 to 80% of our immune system is in the gut-associated lymphoid tissue. The acronym for that is GALT. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very true that good health begins in the colon. We do need to take care of it.
You know, I would say that our understanding of how probiotics work and the correct way of applying probiotic therapy to various medical problems is analogous to our understanding of surgery in about the year 1750. Because they had surgery then, and they knew how to do a lot of stuff, but they had an imprecise knowledge of what certain things would do, and a lot of the surgery was kind of scary, seat-of-the-pants stuff. They said, well, look, you know, we got this problem, let's try this, and then the patient would, you know, succumb to the botched surgery, but hey, you know, that's how things progress.
Oh, let's go back to leeches. Wait a minute.
Right, and so, look, you know, obviously the consequences of taking the wrong probiotic are not as dire as botched surgery, but it frankly is a little bit of an empirical science. It's a little bit of trial and error, and different strokes for different folks. We have some people who respond beautifully to one probiotic and badly to another. We have some people say, I can't take Dr. O'Hara's. Okay, fine. We get it. You know, we understand.
We're not going to push the issue, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, they might do better with like a single species probiotic like Culturelle, for example.
Yes. Lactobacillus.
Yep. Right. And also, we know from the science that certain conditions, gastrointestinal symptoms respond to certain organisms. The immune system is stimulated by other organisms. Urinary tract issues might be helped by others. You know, vaginal yeast infections might be helped by certain. We know, for example, that the condition of C. difficile, Clostridium difficile diarrhea, actually responds to a unique probiotic, which is Saccharomyces, which is not even a bacteria. Yeah. It's actually a fungal species. In Europe, they actually have a product called Mutaflor, which is E. coli. Now, we think of E. coli as being deadly, but actually there's good E. coli and bad E. coli. And putting good E. coli back into the digestive tract may be very helpful for some people. I wish we had Mutaflor in this country. We've told some of our patients if they can get over to Europe and they want to pick up some Mutaflor and they want to try it, maybe that's going to be helpful. But it's, you know, it's a matter of regulatory. Here, we think of E. coli as deadly. It's got a bad rap. I think companies are afraid to offer it because of liability concerns. And over in Europe, they may have a different climate in terms of regulatory.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're learning more and more. The knowledge is increasing in leaps and bounds. I'm very excited by our understanding of the microbiome and new studies that are looking at different probiotics, and certainly there's kind of a space race going on to see who can come up with functional probiotics. For example, people are looking for the specific organism which helps people with metabolism and weight, because we know that if we transfer a certain intestinal flora from a fat mouse to a skinny mouse, we'll make that skinny mouse fatter. And vice versa, and vice versa. We can actually take
fascinating.
So we know that there are some that promote obesity and some that promote leanness, and we're just beginning on the cusp of, and boy, when that comes out, You're going to hear about it first, from us here on Intelligent Medicine.
Exactly.
But it ain't rocket science yet. We haven't really nailed it down.
Right. And, you know, it's also, the whole idea of fecal transplant, that's another route, another delivery of introducing better or beneficial bacteria into the colon.
However, that is a bit of a shotgun approach.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not, now I understand some people are doing this, they're following instructions on the internet. You know, it's sort of like Al-Qaeda publishes instructions on how to make a bomb in the kitchen of your mom. You know, and
make a bomb in the kitchen of your mom.
Right, exactly.
You're a poet, don't you know it?
Right. That's their thing. That I didn't make that up. And so there are some people who are attempting to obtain fecal transplants from friends or relatives, and they're doing it at home based on instructions on the internet, and that can be work, but it's a little bit like Russian roulette. We've had patients who have reported that they've done this, and not at my instigation or urging, but they've had bad results.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you read that article in the New Yorker some weeks ago?
Oh yeah,
the guy. Yeah. He's eyeing a neighbor in his building who looks healthy and says, "Can I have some of your? Can I have some of your stool?"
that's an uncomfortable elevator conversation. You know, I mean, I try to sometimes. I go, "Hey, you know, it's cold outside," or "Hey, you know, it looks like you're going to the gym. You're working out good," you know, but. You cross a certain boundary when you start talking about stuff like that.
You look healthy.
Yeah.
What for fecal transplant? Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So, Judy, we hope that helps you. All right. Let's see here. Oh, we've got a message here. Let's see. Do we have a name on this one? From Lee. No, actually, yeah. Yeah. Anyway. I strongly objected to Mayo Clinic's slamming of supplements in its article, Nutrition in a Pill.
Oh, yeah.
Mayo wrote back with the following references. If a person did not listen to your show, they would believe the venerable Mayo Clinic as to why one should not take supplements. Can you address these references in your podcast?
Sure.
It will open the eyes of many who will believe the so-called number one hospital in the U.S., and this note is actually from William. And Dr. Hoffman, I'll tell you about these references. You ready? Reference number one that the Mayo Clinic is using is the Dietary Guidelines for Americans.
Oh, boy.
From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
We're already in trouble.
Exactly.
We're invoking the government as an authority on what we should eat. That's always problematic. That has ended badly before.
Yeah. Another reference from the NIH, Office of Dietary Supplements.
Mm-hmm.
Another one.
I correct you. That's actually the opposite of... No dietary supplements. That's actually, sort of empowered to pass judgment on the lack of efficacy of supplements.
Right.
Look, I mean, appreciate their effort, the FDA, to evaluate supplements, but they come to it from a rather skeptical bias. Let me cut through it before. So I have to say that this is a bit of really an essay question, and we can't tackle this in the short format of a podcast. You know, we can certainly do this. I can devote a whole clinical focus to this, but I have in the past, and people can find some of the stuff that I've written at drhoffman.com. Pushing back against the naysayers about supplements, and I've done this repeatedly in several articles. So maybe I'll try and do a resume of some of those articles so that people can update it if they haven't been following us closely. But let me just say that there are studies that if you cherry pick studies, you will see that, for example, some studies show a lack of efficacy of this or that or the other supplement. There are also some studies that show that multivitamins lack efficacy against cancer and heart disease. But there are actually some studies that show that multivitamins have efficacy against cancer and heart disease. And so in sum total, I think it remains controversial. I also think one of the problems with some of these studies is they're using sort of poor quality low potency multis that may have, for example, have 400 international units of vitamin D, which isn't really enough to do much. They're using it in, you know, very healthy populations who probably have already adequate levels of most vitamins, so you're not going to see much difference in a short period of time.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, they're using vitamins in people who are half dead. You know, they're like on their last legs. And so, frankly, you know, vitamins don't have...
A multi's not going to save them, right.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't have a Lazarus-like property. So, you know, and we can't make overblown claims for vitamins and supplements. It's not just about, you know, vitamins and supplements, because otherwise people would live like Methuselah, you know, by taking vitamins and supplements. I think they help. I think that they need to be targeted. I think that, you know, so, you know, I think those are some of the considerations there. I will say this about, you know, when you read like the Berkeley Health Letter or the Harvard Health Letter or the Mayo Health Letter, these are actually not really written by the top doctors at these institutions. Occasionally, they will grab a soundbite or a quote from one of these. These are just written mostly by science writers, so-called science writers, who, you know, sometimes they don't have top-shelf skills in the field of nutrition or health. They just want to talk about something which is of general interest to the public, like should you take vitamins? And their knowledge is limited. So they may, you know, grab a soundbite from a doctor who's skeptical about vitamins and incorporate it in an article. But that is not, you know, that's not really delving into the vast literature, you know, where there are literally tens of thousands of articles about, you know, studying these supplements, which is...
To a degree, it's misinformation.
Yeah, it's dumbed down. It's
or even disinformation if you're a conspiracy theorist. So
yeah, it's dumbed down. And it, and frankly, disinformation comes from the fact that there's an agenda-driven element to this, which is that a lot of these publications and a lot of mainstream media supports tighter regulation of supplements. And I think there's an effort by the FDA and pharmaceutical companies and the medical establishment to make the case that vitamins and supplements are unregulated and potentially unsafe, and we need stronger regulation to rein in the excesses of the supplement industry. And so they'll cherry pick examples of people taking, you know, harmful supplements, which rarely happens that people get sick. And in fact, we shared a story on Intelligent Medicine last week that in the year recorded, 2013, there was not a single death due to a supplement recorded in the United States by the Poison Control Bureau. And I'm not saying that supplements can't cause problems. They can. And people can misuse them. And,
that's true.
You know, they
People can misuse anything.
People can misuse water, you know.
Yes.
I think probably more people, you know, can... you come to harm due to either dehydration or excess water consumption than you know, probably due to supplement consumption.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for pointing this out to us, William. But, yeah, all the references used here, unfortunately, by Mayo Clinic are not, you're just getting one side of the coin, and it's dietary guidelines for Americans. I remember even when I was an undergrad, I'd be rolling my eyes.
But let's even suppose that they wanted to do a story that's a meritorious story. They could actually put together some evidence that supplements are harmful. But usually, in journalism, you know, I studied journalism in junior high school and high school. I was in the high school newspaper, and what they taught us early on is you got to really get both sides of the story. So no matter how convinced you are of one point of view, you always get a quote, you know. So if it, you know, let's take the most egregious example. If a teacher were accused of beating up his students in class, you know, you would report that. You would report the accusations. But then you would go to the teacher and you say, well, what do you have to say about that? And the teacher says, I deny, you know, when reached, history teacher John Smith denied all these allegations and said that they are fabricated. You know, you'd have to put in, you know, some countering, and there's plenty that you can say that supports the pro-supplement viewpoint. And unfortunately, these biased articles do not reflect that.
Yeah. Yeah. It is unfortunate. Yeah. All right. Okay. Hopefully we've cleared that up. All right.
We'll never clear that up.
But, you know, that's part of the mission here, you know, is to educate the public. Speaking of which,
yes.
The next question is from Rich in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Dr. Hoffman, great show, terrific insight. Thanks for educating us. I read that whey protein in a shake is only 25% absorbed, with 75% flushed through our system and out the back door unused.
Hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Is this correct? And if so, can you increase the absorption with digestive enzymes like proteases or any other enzymes for that matter?
Well, you know, first of all, I don't think that's true.
I don't think it's true either, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, actually, you could say that about calcium, for example. It's certain things that you take are only partially absorbed. So it's been estimated that about 1/7 of the calcium you take actually gets absorbed into your bloodstream. And that's okay because the body regulates it. If it absorbed all the calcium you took, you might have excess calcium. So it's actually regulated. You know, I think it, first of all, it's highly dependent on the individual. If the individual has celiac disease or ulcerative colitis or something like that, they might malabsorb.
They have absorption problems.
Yeah, or like a very elderly person, you know, feeble digestion. They might have some problems absorbing, and then they might benefit from some digestive enzymes or something like that. I doubt it. And so a corrective on that might be to just, you know, simply take more, recognizing that, you know, it's only partially absorbed. That's no big whoop. You know, you could just, you know, take more to achieve your level, that your requisite level that you want to get. You know, there are, I mean, you don't absorb everything that you take in. Otherwise, the body
takes what it needs.
Yeah, imagine if
as you've got a good functioning GI tract. Yes,
you know, you go for like a steak dinner and you have a 24-ounce sirloin steak. It doesn't immediately appear in your biceps. otherwise, you'd have
Wouldn't that be cool?
Like
Popeye with a spinach. You just take that can of spinach and it would wind up in his
exactly
biceps and his forearms.
Exactly.
Forearms.
Well, then every time you ate out, you'd have to buy a new suit, right?
Yeah.
You know, so there's this homeostasis when it comes to absorption, and the body utilizes what it needs. Unfortunately, we subject our bodies to excess, and then the excess gets deposited in all the wrong places, you know, as fat reserves.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would continue taking the whey protein, Rich, and no, unless you have absorption problems, like Dr. Hoffman said, you should be fine. Otherwise, take some digestive enzymes. That would be fine, too.
Yeah. But whey protein is highly digestible. It's really very easy for the body to assimilate. And, you know, most foods, for example, if you eat, you know, like a very high fiber food, you know, the nutrients are sort of locked in there. And that's okay, too, because you need fiber. But anyway.
Yeah. But you don't want to get too much fiber. Because that's like eating rope and yanking it through. There's such thing as too much fiber where it's binding everything up and it's just passing through you.
Yeah.
So, but most people aren't getting too much fiber. That's almost a non-issue for most people. So, and whey protein is a wonderful source of the branched-chain amino acids.
Right, which are specifically going to muscle. They're the constituents of muscle.
Yeah. So after exercise, after a workout, taking a whey protein shake or a smoothie is an excellent idea.
Yep.
Yeah.
Been proven to really improve muscle recovery and build strength.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have another question?
We
have time for one more.
We do. Okay. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. Listen to this. He says, I am Carl Lewis Jr.
Wow. He's like the Olympic athlete?
Wait.
Wait, the Olympic athlete? Oh.
And I frequently listen to your radio program or the podcast. I haven't heard you or any of your guests mentioned any pros and cons of steaming vegetables and its effect on the vegetables. It's my luck that I missed that episode if you already covered this. I've been wondering if there are any pros and cons. Is there any chance that you might be addressing this topic? Thanks. I enjoy the show. Carl Lewis Jr., aviation maintenance technician. I wonder if it is the son or a relative of Carl Lewis. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a fairly common name, so we don't know. So, all right, so
steaming vegetables is a wonderful idea. You do want to be able to add flavor. It's probably better. It's certainly better than boiling your vegetables because then a lot of the nutrients are coming out into the water.
With the exception, I made a soup the other day.
Yeah.
I made a soup the other day and I bought some Swiss chard, a whole bunch of Swiss chard, and I chopped it up and I threw it into the soup that I was making, and that's when you really, you extract the nutrients in the broth, you know,
yes.
which is vegetable broth, and then you're drinking it. So, you know.
That's true.
So some people say if you're going to boil your vegetables, you might as well drink the water. Well, in this case, when
exactly.
you're making a soup, you're actually, you are drinking the water.
You want it in a soup. Precisely. You want that. But if you're going to boil the vegetables and leave that water behind and throw it out, there's the nutrition, you know, that's where most of the nutrition goes. So in a pot of soup, in stew, anything like that, that's perfectly fine to simmer and boil. But steaming is another...
It's preferable. On a platform. You can get those platforms that are, they open up like fans, and they just, mm-hmm. you put it in a pot. They are adjustable sure. size. And
some of
then,
them are metal, some of them are bamboo
yeah.
or something. Yeah.
And that's a good... Or you can put it on steamers. Top, you know, and use a steamer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people say, well, okay, well, but you're heating it. Aren't you damaging the vitamins? And the answer is, to some small extent, you may be damaging the vitamins, but you're also liberating a lot more vitamins. So, for example, you know, think of the prospect of eating collard greens raw. I mean, I guess some people do that, but you have to have teeth like a horse to extract the nutrients from that. My favorite way of making collard greens is first I blanch them or steam them, mm-hmm. and then I chop them finely, and then I saute them in... you can saute them in coconut oil. You can saute them in butter or olive oil. Mm-hmm. And or if you're going to do it Southern style, you're going to saute it in, in lard, pork lard.
Lard.
You know,
get a
which
ham
is,
hock going in there,
yeah,
too.
Exactly. And that's like, collards, Southern style collards. And there's a method to the madness. Now, you think, oh, why do they eat all that, you know, lard? That's bad. Well, you know, actually, green leafy vegetables and many vegetables contain fat-soluble nutrients. You know, the carotenoids are actually fat-soluble, mm-hmm. Unlike B vitamins, and they're better extracted when you sauté something in a little oil or fat.
Right. And there's beta-carotene there, yeah.
And you actually derive more. So, mm-hmm. So that's a sensible and nutritious way to cook, and you're really not damaging the nutrients. And you're also you're breaking down those hard plant fibers, and you're liberating the nutrients from that.
Right,
you know,
look,
the people are the raw foods enthusiasts. That's great. You know, some raw foods, fine. But, you know, what really caused humans to leap into a whole new phase of evolution was the discovery of fire and food preparation, which allowed them to extract the nutrients more efficiently from food. So instead of pouncing on an animal and tearing off flesh with their teeth or chewing all day long, chew, 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 like a cow chewing its cud, humans could spend, you know, some time in food preparation, which also caused socialization and cooperation and helped the humans develop their brains, but also helped humans extract more nutritional value from the foods that they ate, and spending less time all day long hunting and gathering food, and thus having more time for specialization and civilization, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
so,
Carl Lewis Jr., we hope that answers your question.
All right. And, hey, you know, I'll challenge you a 100-meter dash sometime.
There you go.
All right. I think we have more questions, but that's all the time that we have. We'll get to all the rest of the questions our next Intelligent Medicine podcast. Keep those questions coming, and if you don't hear your question answered right away, don't worry. It's probably in the hopper. We'll get to it eventually.
Yes.
Thanks very much for joining us. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
We had a lively session. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.